हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 55, Chapter 3, Liberation from the Illusory Energy. Sri Abhihotra replied, prescribed duties, non-performance of such duties, and forbidden activities are topics one can properly understand through authorized study of the Vedic literature. This difficult subject matter can never be understood by mundane speculation. So just because one's intelligent, one can't understand these things. Right? If the Veda's purpose is to know Krishna, that means that the knowledge of the Veda actually can't be understood just by being intelligent. It's not enough. There has to be the devotion. Otherwise, you'll catch something, whatever fits your conditioning, whatever modes of nature you're under, you'll catch those some little secondary points. And depending upon your qualification, you may have a huge amount of those secondary points. But the point is you'll never actually understand what prescribed duties, non-performance, and forbidden activities are. Because when you take it up into the transcendental platform, that's where it'll fall apart.
That's what is happening with these schools.
Yes, that's what happens with all these schools. It's that they're intelligent, they catch so many things, they put so many things together, but they can't come to the proper conclusion. Because the conclusion they want is already wrong.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So.
When you say authorized study, it means it's...
Authorized, that means coming in parampara. From the, like, it's already been... So each one is going to speak. It's not going to be in opposition or different from the previous. It's just a continuation. So as, Pipalayana, he spoke about the spiritual master, surrendering to the spiritual master. So that is authorized Vedic literature, Vedic study. So as is said, those literatures that are supportive of devotional bhakti scriptures, that's what you'll read. The ones that they are also supporting, but unfortunately the presentation they are is attractive to the karmis and jnanis. You don't need to read those because you're getting already a direct expression in the bhakti shastras. The authorized Vedic literature is the sound incarnation of the personality of Godhead. So it is Krishna himself, is the sound incarnation of the personality of Godhead himself, and thus Vedic knowledge is perfect. So it's not just an energy, it's him himself. And then through pleasing him, through his energies, now you can understand. Right? Wow. I don't even know what that is. Oh, it's a fridge. It sounds like an elephant, though. Yeah. Sandwich. And thus, Vedic knowledge is perfect. That's because it's Krishna. So this idea, oh, it doesn't apply, it's this and that. It's Krishna. Krishna's eternal. It always applies. You want to use it, it works. You don't want to use it, then for you, yes, it doesn't work because you don't use it. This idea it can't be used is Krishna's world. Right? You know, it's like the criminal saying you can't actually go out and get a regular job. You know? No, you can if you want to move in that world. Now, if you're a criminal and you want to move in that world, then yeah, if you have a regular job, unless it's the front for something else, you know, you're selling fruit, but behind them there's this huge, you know, underground operation. But then it's yeah.
Let me say that Vedic knowledge can be used in all the ages. That means if people say that in Kali Yuga it cannot be used, that means it is their own desire not to...
It's their own desire or their own misunderstanding. If they say the knowledge can't be used in Kali Yuga, then the point is, since it's Krishna's creation, then what knowledge does apply in Kali Yuga? And so Krishna is going to take care of all the yugas except the Kali Yuga? Like that? You know, so why would that be? So the knowledge is written for all. That's why Manu, it's for all ages. Like that. And if there's something that's not, then that's said. Lord Chaitanya says what's not. You know. And then there's ones that are written for specific yugas. So of all the 40 Dharma Shastras, main 20, but some are written, Manu's all four. Some of them, I think, Parasara is just for Kali Yuga. Like that. Yajnavalkya, I'm not exactly sure what it's for. Some of them are just for Satyuga, some for Treta, some for Dwapara, like this. So they're specifically given. So to say, oh, it doesn't apply, it doesn't work, it's kind of like, yeah, if you don't do it, you'll get no result. But to say you can't do it, it's kind of like, since when can't you do it? You know? Like when devotees were out in dhotis a lot, it actually became a fashion in Italy for 6 months. You know, among those who were into fashion stuff, you know, the couture people, they wore dhotis. You know, they were sewn, so you put them on. You know, like these ones we get for kids, you know, that have the elastic and all that, and you put them on like pants. But they were dhotis. It was in fashion for 6 months. Because we were wearing them. Now we don't wear them, they're not in fashion. The way it works. So this whole thing is, oh, you can't do this. Just no. All you have to do is translate. You know, you put it into modes of nature. Translate. You know, and then it means I don't want to because I identify differently, and I don't like how people deal with me if I dress like this, and so it makes me uncomfortable. So therefore, I'm not going to wear it. But because that will sound like I'm attached, I'm going to say it's something spiritual, and I'll claim it's preaching. Because if you say it's preaching, that trumps anything else. That pretty much ends the modes of nature translate. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, you know, run if you don't know, you just run it through the modes of nature translate. So it's a good app.
Yeah. Huh. This proper understanding, this means up to the level of vidya.
Proper understanding, no, means vigyan, means you're talking about your hearing, understanding, and realizing. If you're using that formula, then yes, you're trying to get it to there. Because vigyan here means you actually understand it, so you apply it. Understanding means you can see why it would work on that, but you haven't realized it. But you're practicing it. So only at the stage of shravana, then you are asking. Means you've heard and you ask questions, one, to clear any doubts that are there, but also to understand how to apply it. Right? And having gotten to that point, then it works. Does that make sense? Then, now you can practice it. And then by practicing it, then you'll get realization. So we're trying to get realization of the relationship between the living entity and the Lord, and to be able to function in that relationship. So it's different from understanding. Understanding means it makes sense. Realization means it's a value. You're going to do that. Because something makes sense doesn't mean you'll do it. Like so many things are logical, make sense, yeah, but you're not going to do it. But what you value, you'll do. So that's what you're trying to get to, yes. But that comes by practice and deliberation. Vidyagyan, yes, means by practicing what's being given by the spiritual master, we're practicing that, we're having faith, we're practicing in that, then, by the grace of the spiritual master, this will be revealed in the heart, that you'll actually value it and understand it. That means realize it, and therefore your commitment to practicing becomes greater. At that point now, it's easy to convince others. Right? So we were discussing before is that many choose preaching methods that don't use the tradition or the philosophy in that so much. One, it may be that you have situations in which you can't use it. But two, it may be they don't have themselves a realization, so they don't see the value, so they don't do it. And because anything in connection with Krishna is going to give a benefit, they're seeing some result. And so then, naturally, then that's encouraging. And because it's connected to Krishna, it's good. But then so that's not a problem in itself. The problem comes up is when you start to claim that this is superior to any other kind of preaching that goes on now or before. And when that person is only in the door and practicing Krishna consciousness because of the kind of preaching they said you can't use. Because if they had used the kind of preaching they are, there's a good chance they wouldn't be a devotee. Okay, they ought to be a community devotee, but who trains community? Right? You can be community, no one will train you. There is no training like that. Some yatras will do it because they understand. But most, advantage of community means zero responsibility for ISKCON and for the temple and for the managers and the preachers. You just go out, do a program, they give some donations, you go back, Hari Bol. But if they live in the temple, you actually have to train them, see how they behave, this and all that. You have responsibility, there's legal liabilities, all that. So the whole point is, yeah, nice. It means more people are doing it. That's great. But at the same time, it's from those could be more serious. That why wouldn't you want to train them? Yes, before only those could be seriously trained came to the temples. And so now we have a wider range. But then in getting that wider range, do we have those that have that seriousness? You know, some individuals, they do that, but some don't. You know what I'm saying? So the point is if you realize its value, therefore that you preach it. Just like if you realize some modern, mundane value, you preach it. You know what I'm saying? You know, somebody's into a quality. They value it, so that's why they preach it. And others, they listen and all that and try to remove their doubts, and they may understand. So if you're doing it, that's okay, but they won't do it. But when you realize, then they do it. So dynamic preaching, dynamic, you know, influencing on your own and others' life comes from realization, not from knowledge and understanding and skills. That's a very, very major mistake. Because it's thought if you have the knowledge and skills, everything's perfect. That's like saying if you have money, you'll be happy. It's in the same category of illusion. You know, it's just a little bit more intellectual, while the other one's a little more practical.
Can be mistaken this realization with something like subtle material
But realization, the point is that has to be now connected to Krishna. Just because you have a realization doesn't mean that it's Krishna conscious. Like all these great sages and that, they have realization in the Vedic knowledge, but not in Krishna consciousness. So they value and they live a lifestyle in the mode of goodness. But it's not pure goodness. Therefore, there is a touch of passion and ignorance. There is some desire to control and enjoy on some way that still remains. But now when they take up bhakti, it becomes pure goodness. Then it actually, that will be the proper. Okay. Conversation. Is it? Well, it's just one guy. Ooh. I say, externalizing the inner dialogue.
Expressing realization.
Yes, expressing. Yes. Does that make sense? So you want to realize, but there's a difference in realizing just material knowledge and realizing spiritual. Because the difference is what your value, what you do. So if your realization, then you do things that are not in line with or opposed to the Vedic version, that's material. You know, of course, because we speak so strongly against material that no devotee will agree that it's material. That's why they make up philosophies to try to prove that it's spiritual.
you know, or at least intellectual. Because if it's intellectual, then that's valued in the modern scenario, so you'll drop it. Maybe they can't prove it's spiritual, but at least they can prove it's intellectual. Does that make sense? Or in other groups, you have to prove it's practical. And, you know, because being practical is the ultimate goal. So it just depends on what your condition is, that dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. Right? But kama, you can't preach and all that. So, you know, that's why devotees, though, they'll be liberal. They freak out about the liberalness of the Vedic culture. Right? When Krishna comes to Dwarka and comes to Mathura, wherever he comes, if it's a major thing like that, it always mentions the society girls. Yes. Always. And how is society going this and that? Because they have their own concept of morality. So that's the whole fun. You know? That you see is that they're much more narrow-minded than they think they are. So, yes. Is that good? We're good. Good. Okay. The authorized Vedic literature is the sound incarnation of the personality of Godhead himself. And thus, Vedic knowledge is perfect. Even the greatest learned scholars are bewildered in their attempts to understand the science of action if they neglect the authority of Vedic knowledge. So as soon as you don't base it on the Veda, you will be bewildered. Because in one scenario, that non-Vedic understanding may seem to work. But in the long run, it may not. Right? Or it works in one scenario, but another scenario, it won't work. Like that. Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 4:17, "The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is." Right? So he's saying the same thing. Right? So that's the, because non-performance of such duties, you have to know what non-performance is. Because if there's a duty you're supposed to do and you don't do it, that's non-performance. It's not sinful. It's not like forbidden action. But you get a bad reaction for not doing what you're supposed to do. But at the same time, if it's activities that are material activities that are not important, like say demigod worship, worship of the forefathers, by not doing those and you're worshiping Krishna, then that inaction is actually spiritual. So that's why he says the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Because if you understand what's devotion and what's not, then now you can understand. But if you're just trying to understand action and inaction and how you say,
forbidden action,
without devotional service, it becomes very difficult. Because all action is meant to please Krishna. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in Rajavidya, the King of Knowledge, chapter 8. Right? Let's say again, interesting. So inaction means you're not performing the material, you won't get the material result. You're performing the spiritual, you're getting the spiritual result. Mm-hmm. And why? Because that material result isn't actually important. Mm-hmm. But the principle in that, you're getting by worshipping Krishna. Right? But if you're working in the field of karma, inaction means you don't get any result. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Rajavidya, like, let's say in a year you have so many vacation days. Right? So now, let us say you are going to work. So someone's a materialist. And Some day in the week he decides not to go to work. So he's not performing his duty. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a non-performance. Will he get a result for that day? Mm-hmm. No, he gets no money. Mm-hmm. Like that. Unless he takes his profit in, you know, how you say, hours spent on the couch and whether he grew roots or not into the couch. You know, stuff like that. But otherwise he gets no benefit. Now let's say that same day a devotee takes off from work and goes to a festival at the temple, let's say it's Janmashtami. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't get the material benefit, but he gets the spiritual benefit. Mm-hmm. So that's the point, is you're getting benefit. So in the spiritual you're always getting benefit. Mm-hmm. Like that. But in the material, then you have to be very careful what you're doing, whether you'll get benefit or not. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Srila Prabhupada writes in Raja Vidya, the King of Knowledge, Chapter 8, "The path of karma is very intricate. Therefore, we should understand the distinctions between karma, akarma, and vikarma. If we simply engage in Krishna consciousness, everything becomes clear." Right? That's how it's done. Because even the greatest learned scholars, they're bewildered. Means the greatest learned scholars means we're talking about the mundane. Because otherwise, devotees, means you'll say, you know, a devotee is very scholarly or this or that, but where they're not identified as scholars. Right? Devotee is the identity. Otherwise, we'll have to make distinctions between what we should do, what we should not do, in order to become, not to become entangled. In the ordinary course of life, we unknowingly break some law and have to suffer the consequences. Similarly, the laws of nature are very strict and stringent, and they accept no excuse. It is a law of nature that fire burns, and even if a child touches it, he will be burned despite his ignorance and innocence. Thus, we have to choose our course of action very carefully, lest the stringent laws of nature react to bind us to suffering. It is therefore necessary to understand that work, what work to do and what work to avoid. The word karma refers to prescribed duties. The word vikarma refers to activities which are against one's prescribed duties. And the word akarma refers to activities which have no reaction at all. Right? So here, then we're defining akarma means spiritual.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, in ones where we're trying to say akarma means non-performance of duties, meaning that's on the material platform, means that you're not doing what you should do.
Yes.
Then the spiritual, instead of becoming akarma, is called okarma.
Yes.
So sometimes you see akarma means it's spiritual, sometimes okarma means it's spiritual.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And even when we say karma yoga, then that can mean it's spiritual.
Yes.
In the execution of akarmic activities, there may appear to be some reactions, but in actually there are not. When we work under the directions of Krishna, this is actually the case. There are no reactions. If we take it upon ourselves to kill someone, we are subject to capital punishment by the state government. Our actions are then called vikarma, for they are against prescribed actions. If, however, the government drafts us into the army, and we engage in battle and kill someone, we do not suffer the reactions. And this is called akarma. In one case, we are acting according to our own whims, and in the other, we are acting under the direction of the government. Similarly, when we act under the direction of Krishna, our actions performed are called akarma, for that kind of activity has no reaction. Right? So that's why also materialists can't really understand, because they'll say the non-performance of duties, you know, the akarma, is simply taken in that. You're supposed to do something you're not. But the point is no. It means you're not engaged in material activities. You're engaged in spiritual. So that's why it can't be understood. Right? Does that make sense?
So Maharaj, here, a karma can be only to do under authority.
Yes.
It, can be
it has to be under authority.
Government here,
yes, it has to be under authority.
Yes.
So that's why it means. In other words, you're not performing one prescribed duty by performing another prescribed duty. Because you can see there's akarma here, they get no reaction, but they're performing a duty given to them by the government.
Yes.
So they're fighting in the battle.
Yes.
People die.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sri Abhihotra continued. Childish and foolish people are attached to materialistic fruitive activities, although the actual goal of life is to become free from such activities. Right? So you're supposed to become free, but we're working in such a way we become entangled. Right? Therefore, the Vedic injunctions indirectly lead one to the path of ultimate liberation by first prescribing fruitive religious activities, just as the father promises his child candy so that the child will take his medicine. Right? Because if you follow the Vedic literature and you are regulated, right? So then you're following authority, you're doing things in a proper way, which is how you're supposed to perform devotional service. Right? We perform devotional service regularly under authority.
Yes.
And that's called steady devotional service. So we're fixed in that. So they can't do that, then you start them on these other things. Right? So, yeah. Something sense. So then slowly over lifetimes you take them up. So if you want to do that, means this, as we were discussing in the earlier discussion, you can take someone up by that method, just being nice, being good, and all that. But it takes lifetimes and lifetimes. And it's called the slow path. And then to do that without the Vedic culture is even going to be slower. So, I mean, if that's what you can do, then nice. Then just say, I'm on the slow path. Right? So it's when we have the opportunity as Kali Yuga that we want to use a little quicker, then that's what we do. But the idea is they grow up, then the child will take medicine without the candy, because they understand the purpose and the benefit, so they'll take their medicine.
Because they want the candy. Because they want the candy.
Yeah.
So medicine.
Yeah, yeah. By taking the medicine, now you can eat the candy, right? The other ones say, yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The meaning of the Vedas is hard to understand. It uses indirect expression, paroksha vada, in which the meaning appears to be something different by the sages who understood the intention of the Lord in order to hide the real meaning. The Lord has said, the Vedas divided into three divisions ultimately reveal the living entity as pure spirit soul. The Vedic seers and mantras, however, deal in esoteric terms, and I also am pleased by such confidential descriptions. Right? Because he's pleased by it, because one is that only those who have that interest or that inclination, then they'll know. Because otherwise, if people do what you should means what would be you should be used in the spiritual form, but you're not using it that way. It's just like, let's say someone is being very materialistic, right? And they're trying to pass it off as if they're being very nice or being very charitable. Right? People don't like that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They like it that if it's material, it's just material.
Yes.
I may like it or not, but at least it is what it is. Right? But if you try to pass it off as something else, then that's not good. So if people are trying to pass off the spiritual things, you know, I mean, the material things as spiritual, that's not good. That's one aspect. So therefore, if you're doing karma, it's not. You're following karma kanda. It's obvious. You're jnana, you follow jnana kanda. You're bhakti, you follow that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clear.
Yes.
The other aspect is if you have somebody you have very nice relationships with and dealings, then, you know, a lot of times speaking indirectly is interesting. Right? Especially if only you understand and anybody else around doesn't understand what you're talking about. Right? You know, so then Krishna and the sages, then they understand what's going on, but no one else does. So that's why you need the bona fide spiritual master. Right? Otherwise, just like in this point here, our karma, by that we would simply take it as the non-performance of duties. But Prabhupada's pointing out is actually akarma means you're performing Krishna conscious duties. So, in other words, the point of akarma means you get no reaction. We take it akarma means non-performance of duties. But Prabhupada's saying no, akarma means the no reaction to your endeavor.
Yes.
Means no material reaction.
Yes.
So then that means spiritual reaction means this devotional service. Right. Well, even the jnanis will take it as even if they take it as non-reaction, right? The karmis will take it as non-performance of duties. The jnanis would take it as no reaction, but they would think it's nice karma. I'll get liberated. So even they still can't fully understand. No, because there'll be some reaction because they will be back. Right. So then here is that akarma, no reaction actually means pure devotional service. So we won't know that without the parampara. We would have no idea of that. The indirect expression is explained. Karma is prescribed to liberate the people. See? It's all about liberating the people. Yeah, I mean, before the last one was talking about the equity. Now this one's talking about the liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we, and before that, how they were friend to all living entity. I think that was the first one. So fraternity, it's all there. Yes, it's the bona fide. It's just that one has to see it in terms of akarma rather than vikarma.
Some detail.
Small detail. Like that. It's one path. We're just, it's a little detail, whether it's that end or this end. You know, it's like that. One path, one path. But karma is prescribed for going to swarga, not for attaining liberation from karma, one could say. It is like ordering children to take medicine. If you take this medicine, I will give you a sweet. Tempting the child in this way, the father makes the children drink bitter juice and gives them sweets. Otherwise, he cannot make them drink the medicine. Yeah, or even sometimes you have to put the medicine in the sweet, because if it's medicine, they just won't take it. You know? But, however, the goal of drinking medicine is not getting sweets, but to cure disease. Right? So you're going for the one, but you're getting the other. Right? So that's the whole point. All karma is meant to liberate the living entity. Because what are you gaining from there? Are we supposed to be steady in devotional service? Yes. Are we supposed to act according to authority? So karma's teaching that. Right? You know, you're respecting authorities, you're, you know, acting according to your position. So many, all the, you could say in karma's explained all the proper activities and attitudes of etiquette. You know, what's the appropriate, how to situate yourself and all that. Now, jnana is explaining how to be detached from all that, because we're the soul, not the body. Right? Does that make sense? And then bhakti is how to engage all those activities to please Krishna. So that's what it's for. So if someone's sincere, then they'll naturally move up through the process.
Yes. Okay? Everybody is supposed to come to bhakti, following the Veda.
Yes. Yeah. So as you see, the farther we go in the Bhagavatam, the more broad it is. But the point is it's not the external that you're performing, it's the attitude in which it's being performed. So that's the problem we were saying before with the hard and soft preaching. It's all about externals. We're not even discussing here the primary, the internal. We'll claim.
But now, if we have this knowledge in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, we can more easily deviate on the secondary path.
Yes. Well, you see, as those devotees that were directly doing with Prabhupada, he's always giving that. And then it filters down for a little bit. And then at some point when you give up following the Vedic things, then it disappears.
Yes.
You know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And the results of karma and jnana automatically achieved by bhakti.
It's not the automatic if you're coming, if they're for the purpose of. If you practice that in connection with Krishna, serving Krishna, then karma and jnana will give you. They're just tools to use within, they're just the situations you're in to perform bhakti. Because karma is the action, you know, and the moods, you know, they say the emotional moods or those kind of things, and the jnana will be the intellectual understanding and that attitude. Right? But they themselves won't give. I mean, that's why it's called the slow path. You know, thousands and thousands of lifetimes you move up through the process, but then when you get to the top, you end up going back down because you don't take bhakti. You know? Thus, the Vedas prescribe karma yoga, tempting people with material results in order to liberate them from karma. So you have karma, then you have karma yoga. So karma yoga means you're connecting your karma to Krishna. Right? So then one is tempted by the karma that you'll get, but because it's yoga, then you get liberated in the process. So at some point, then you don't want. Like Dhruva Maharaj, what did he want? He wanted a kingdom. And just any old kingdom? No, one bigger than his, you know, Lord Brahma's, you know. So not even bigger than his father, bigger than, you know, his grandfather. Right? And so that's why he's doing that, but Narad Muni is engaged him in karma yoga. So he's worshipping the Lord, but with this purpose of his karma. But then attaining the Lord, he's not interested in the karma. That's the whole process. Right? So it's just like we're studying this knowledge, all this technical knowledge and all this kind of thing. We may have, you know, you call it what we're looking for. We like knowledge. We like the different things, and we have so many ideas what knowledge will do for us. You know? But we find by going that all it's doing is pointing out pure devotion. So then through this knowledge we learn pure devotion. Now we can engage that knowledge in Krishna's service. So it's not just to have degrees and have, you know, have that knowledge and have that respect and authority and all that. It's because now we become devotional from it. Then we can give that to others. Right? Same with the karma. You're doing it for the benefit, then now you can do it for Krishna and you can show others how to engage in that. So Buddha Yoga means that combination. Right? Like the fifth chapter, action in Krishna consciousness. So you're taking both the karma yoga and the jnana yoga, that combination, that creates the buddhi yoga. Right? So,
it just struck me that Dhruva Maharaj, as you said, he is engaged in karma yoga by Narada Muni, but the externals, they appear just like severe tapasya, like some jnani or yogi.
Yeah, well, the yogis are karmis. The jnani would probably not do that, but the yogis, when they ever do the yoga and all that, it's actually karma, because they're trying to get something from it, some siddhis or this or that. Now, you do see devotees in Satya Yuga, because that's the process, that they're doing it to realize Krishna and take up devotional service. So we have examples in the Bhagavatam, that many of the devotees there, that was their method. But you see, it's all classified as karma. Because even though they're worshipping the Paramatma, meditating, what they want is siddhi. You know. Well, if they want bhakti, then we call them devotees.
Give those examples too.
Yes. Sri Abhyahotra continued. If an ignorant person who has not conquered the material senses does not adhere to the Vedic injunctions, certainly he will engage in sinful and irreligious activities. You know, so it's there. It's just that's what it's going to be. So that's the problem. The modern morality, they're trying to claim that they're so moralistic, but they will be doing things they shouldn't be. Right. Thus, his reward will be repeated birth and death. But, you know, they do get the same, you know, how you say that, equity. Everybody gets, you know, repeated birth and death. So, you know, it all works out. Lord Kapila instructed his mother, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:33:11. My dear mother, those who are actually transcendentalists certainly follow my instructions, as I have given them to you. You may rest assured that if you traverse this path of self-realization perfectly, surely you shall be freed from fearful material contamination and shall ultimately reach me, right? So that's the benefit you get on the material platform. The benefit you get from the spiritual activities is freedom from the material contamination, right? Because that's the main problem. Why do we not remember Krishna? Because we're distracted by material contamination. Right? So when we remove that material contamination, now we can remember Krishna. But only if that's what we're trying to do. Right? Freed from material contamination, that shall surely ultimately reach me. Mother, persons who are not conversant with this method of devotional service certainly cannot get out of the cycle of birth and death. So one has to understand devotional service, how it works, the activities of devotional service. Otherwise, mixed devotional service means you're doing something that's favorable for devotional service and something that's not. Right? So it's like, you're giving that the father's giving the medicine, but he's also giving a sweet. Now the sweet is not necessarily ideal for the disease, but they're taking the medicine. So at least they'll get 80-90% efficiency from the medicine. Right? So that's better than nothing. Right? But now if we say, okay, see, it's all right to eat sweets, and so you just eat mostly sweets and just take a, you know, a little drop of the medicine and that's all, you know, because it's bitter and no one likes bitter, and, you know, we're just acting according to our nature, and, you know, all this bitterness that's from another culture and all that kind of jazz, then how much benefit will they get? Right? So the point is that's why the Vedas give. They give the balance. And we may say, no, but we're used to more. But more what? You don't have more opulence, more money, more sense gratification, more knowledge than you do in the Vedic. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that there's more. That's why people were coming to India, because they had more. And then they take it all away. Now then they go, oh, look at these poor guys. You know? What can we learn from them? They got nothing.
Now Indian go outside to get more.
Sorry?
Indian get outside India to get more.
Yeah. Now the Indians are going and taking it back, right? Because in the Western scenario, an Indian on average will get more out of the same situation than those that identify in that Western way. Like that, because they follow that culture. And as the generations go, then you'll see it'll just go back the same. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, the Europeans come, they have a good work ethic, they have nothing, they've come to, they go to America to, you know, make their fortune, they work very hard, they get money. Then their children, because they grew up with that, they do okay. But the grandchildren, it'll start to go. By great-grandchildren, then they're just American. So all that culture is lost, so now they only get what everybody else gets. So anybody comes from anywhere, they come with that first thing, they have that drive, they get. They work. And then it just goes down. So the point is, and what do these others have? That culture, that restriction, that, you know, they won't just spend money on anything or this or that. Does that make sense? Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 16:23, he who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So you won't actually get what you're looking for. Materially, it won't get anything. You won't get liberation. You won't get happiness from whatever it is you've gotten. And you won't actually go back to Godhead. So neither in karma, jnana, or bhakti will you get results. Right? So discarding scriptural injunctions, then we see, we may say, well, the acharyas discard, but they're replaced with something higher. And there's a direct connection. It's scientifically able to be explained. It's not that they're whimsically saying, but if by our own whim we give it up, you know, then we won't get that. Sri Abhihotra continued. By executing without attachment the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas, offering the results of such work to the Supreme Lord, one attains the perfection of freedom from the bondage of material work. So you're getting liberated, but you're establishing yourself in devotion. The material fruit of results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. Right? You have a conditioning, and that conditioning likes particular activities or situations or results. So therefore, you'll engage in that area that is of interest to you. Right? So it's a stimulating of the interest of the performer. But you're doing it without attachment, right? And offering it to Krishna. So that's the whole point, is that the Vedic literatures, the prescribed duties that are there, these are the medium you use for serving Krishna. Right? But now if you do that with attachment, it's called karma, and you'll get, you know, material benefits. You do that without attachment, but not for Krishna, then you'll get liberation. But now if you do it without attachment for Krishna, right, then you get bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the problem. This is the one fundamental point what we were discussing before of not having the knowledge, is that we're thinking that, you know, the hard preaching means, okay, you're following, you know, all these rules, and soft means you're not. You're being practical, right? Yeah, it means we're not, it means it's niyamagraha. We're thinking we don't know or we're willing to follow. So one doesn't know and doesn't follow, the other doesn't know and follows. Right? But it won't give a perfect result. But you know why you're doing it. You're doing it to please Krishna. You do it without attachment. So then we give up following the Vedic, which is supposed to be performed with the, without attachment, and take up an activity that we're attached to, driven by our attachment. How is that going to be progressive? How is that going to be useful in devotional service? You know what I'm saying? So when we just take the action without you know, understanding his connection to Krishna, then you have one. And the other one, you can't understand the connection to Krishna, so you're not going to do it, is the other. You know it's connected with devotional service, but you don't know how. So that's why you study, so you know. Then you can explain. Because if an intelligent person asks you, well, why do you guys do this? Like I always remember when you go out, you know, on the street, one of the first questions is, what's with the mud on the forehead? You know, and then you can explain why there's mud on your forehead. Right? You know? But it's interesting. Only men ask, what's with the mud on your forehead? Women will never ask. Right?
Why not?
Mud.
Not in the West. Because their face is, it's, the whole thing's artificial. So it means it's like that. They may even ask, where'd you get that kind of mud? I like the color, you know, like that.
I always say this is the third eye.
Hmm?
And this is
the
third eye.
Yeah. So, yeah, so can see things that you can't. Yeah. So, get one. Right? Right? So, it's for stimulating the interest of the performer. Then they will perform the activity. In other words, stimulating the interest of the performer, that's the sweet.
Yes.
Then they'll do the activity that actually is the medicine that gets you the result. Right? And so you'll improve. Now you're doing that to please Krishna, so that means now you're doing it without attachment, so that will give you liberation. Right? And because it's to please Krishna, then now you get bhakti. So you actually get all the things, so whatever is attainable in karma and jnana, you get by actual performance of bhakti. That makes sense. But it may not come how you want it, because here you have the thing, but you can't claim it's yours. We want to have it, claim it's ours, get all the benefits from that, all the social distinction and everything, and at the same time be that detached, humble devotee.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't exactly work.
The spiritual master must find some ways to arrange all these things.
Yes, so Prabhupada did.
Actually, Maharaj, this thing about to have like to take the medicine to have some sweet,
yes,
is very we use a lot of this.
Yes, but that's the point. So karma yoga, most will be situated in karma yoga, because that's not a disadvantage, because karma yoga will lead to jnana yoga.
Yes.
Right? From knowledge comes from activity, from karma comes knowledge and detachment.
Yes.
If it's proper. Activity. You get knowledge and detachment from that. Then you can follow jnana. Now whether you're following the externals of jnana or whether you simply follow that path of karma, now with that jnana.
Yes, yes.
Like that. Does that make sense? Yes. So let's say someone's a householder and that realization of jnana comes, it won't change their position as a householder. They'll continue on but with this realization.
Yes.
So they're actually a jnani, practicing jnana yoga, but they're still situated in externals of karma yoga. But all this is happening because they're practicing bhakti. Right? Now let's say if they're brahmachari sannyasi, then they come to this platform of jnana yoga. Then you might find that they simplify their lives or become reduced, everything like that. But even the household, you say they reduce their own, but not the families. Right? You understand? So if they're reducing the families, you know, unnecessarily, it means they don't understand what the process is. Because that will naturally come. If it's connected to Krishna, that will come. Knowledge of detachment will come. But they won't reduce it beyond what will not also work in the family situation. Right? Does that make sense? If the family situation, you go to various kind of programs and situations that you need a wide range of, let's say, clothes and paraphernalia, you'll keep that because it's necessary, but you won't keep more than is necessary. You won't just get it because it's interesting. You'll get it because it's useful. But the family may be still getting it because it's interesting. You know? And then you understand. That's just how it works. That's the system. Right? Does that make sense? Or if, let's say the wife, she comes to this realization that she knows that they're all doing how they, and you just take care of like that, because that's the position they're in. They're still in that position of karma. That's how they work. So then it's just service to Vaishnava. So it doesn't matter. So in either case, it becomes you have to be detached. Right? In other words, the father is going to go out, work hard, make money that the family is going to take. Right? And the mother is going to work hard, you know, cooking food, cleaning the house and that, which the kids will all eat and make a mess of the house. So it's just, that's the way it works. Is that something? Okay. Did we read that?
No, we didn't.
Oh, up there.
Oh,
another Abhihotra continuing. Yes. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the most merciful Vedas, luring them with material results, prescribe karmas for persons who are opposed to bhakti, who are like animals, in order to remove the strong desire for enjoyment. Right? So in mind they say, oh, but you're saying they're like animals in that. Who doesn't like animals? Right? They're cute and cuddly, right? You know, so it's not a problem. But the point is you have to know what an animal is. Right? So, in order to remove the strong desire for enjoyment. In this manner, starting from the morning, they will not have the opportunity for sinful acts by engaging prescribed activities like actions like bathing, by not engaging in eating forbidden food or sex life. The person fears sinful acts and becomes attached to his prescribed duties, right? So they move themselves up towards goodness. You're controlling the passion and ignorance, bringing him to goodness. The idea is now if they come in contact with a devotee, they can take up pure goodness. Right? If such things were not offered as reward, these persons would not respect the rules since it would be impossible for them to follow the injunctions. So that's the difficulty. You have to see what's there. So sometimes when we take the rules, we take it as just the absolute rule, but we don't understand, there's no sugar coating.
Yes.
Like that. Because if the absolute rule works for someone, then great. You know, but if they're not by a conditioned German background, then, you know, you might need a little sugar.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know.
Sometimes it's a big quantity of sugar.
Well, yes, it may be, maybe. But then it slows it down. But yes. The point is they go and then they get attached.
Yes.
And after a while they see it's not the sugar, it's the prescribed duty.
Yes.
Then they can do it because they should.
Yes.
Right? Understanding the meaning of the Vedas and seeing the difficulty in controlling the senses, the intelligent person should perform karma yoga. So you know where you fit, how much you can do, and then you do that nicely for Krishna. And then with time, knowledge and detachment, then it will come. And you see is whatever they're talking about, because before we were asking about is such a difference. But they're pointing out where it'll come to naturally, where you'll end up naturally. So if you follow the Vedic prescriptions properly, that will bring you to that position where you're completely detached. And depending on your situation, then you may take up the lifestyle like the Navi Yogendras, or if you're in a situation where you're preaching or in family life and doing your activities and preaching, then it will take on a different form. But the point is the mentality will be the same. Right? Ambarish is an emperor, like this, and the job. What is this going by? One man shanty time. Yeah. Yeah. So they're both situated, however, but they're all on the same level of realization. Right? See? Yeah. Okay, so and here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nityananda Gaura Premi.